when you graduate, I'm going to stop writing checks. I'm cutting you off. And I said, what? What are you talking about? I don't have a job. I need a little help here. She said, no, I've paid from birth to last day of college, and you're on your own. And I said, she said to me, give me a poem that day. She said, the dead bird under the nest never learns how to fly. And I said, look, that's a great poem, Mom, but I need some cash here. I need a little bit to get going. I'll get a job. She said, no, 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 you're going to figure it out. And I had a really tough couple of years. But she was right. It worked out. After she died, I got a call from the executor. I'm the older brother. I have a brother named Shane. And the executor called me and said, you've got to come down here. We're going to have to disclose something to you about your mother. She kept a secret account for both of her husbands. And there's a rather large amount of money sitting there. And when I got there, I realized something extraordinary. She had invested for almost 50 years in 21 large cap companies that paid dividends in 50% of the portfolio. And the other half was telco bonds, bonds of telephone companies. Why? Because I remember my mother would always say, nobody is going to welch on their phone bill because they don't want their phone to be cut off. It's the last thing they're going to not pay. And so she had all these bonds, 5 to 7 year bonds of telco companies. And that portfolio outperformed everybody else in the family. And she wasn't a stock analyst, but she believed in a very basic philosophy. If you invest in something, you have to get paid to wait. In the case of a stock, she wanted a dividend. In the case of a bond, she wanted monthly or quarterly interest. I started doing some research because I looked at the portfolio performance. I always wondered how she had so much money. She put my brother through college, me through college, all of her family was taken care of. She bought me my first car when I was in school. She always had cash. Now I know how. Look at this. Over the last 40 years, and in fact, it's true for the last 100, over 70% of the market's returns came from dividends, not capital appreciation. When you buy a stock that doesn't pay a dividend, the only way you can possibly make money is it has to go up. And there are periods of time when stocks don't do anything. In fact, they go down sometimes. But when a company is profitable and paying your portion of the profits every quarter, that comes in the form of a dividend. And you make money when that happens. You're sharing in the profits. You can reinvest it if you want, or you can use it to live. The point is, that's where 70% of returns come from. So after I saw that, I never bought a stock that didn't pay a dividend again. Here are some of the other rules I live by. And I've learned this the hard way. I never let a stock become more than 5% of my net worth or a portfolio is in. Now, that's diversification. The downside of this is that you never participate in 100% of the upside of the market. And I'll give you an example. Last year, Apple and Boeing, a company very close to here, were my biggest holdings. They kept going up, and I had to keep cutting and selling them every quarter. In fact, I won the CNBC Stock Picker's Choice last year by picking Boeing. I beat everybody. And that's a stock that pays a dividend. You don't need some high-flying tech stock that doesn't pay you back anything to win. You just need a good profitable company that's growing. The point is, though, every 90 days I have to keep selling Boeing. So I never captured all the upside, but when Boeing turned, I'd already taken the profit. So what happens in a strategy like this is, you get about 80% of the upside, and you only participate between 50 and 60% of the downside when the market corrects. So that's why it's important to manage your portfolio on a quarterly basis. Number two, there are 11 sectors in the S&P. Energy is a sector, technology is a sector, defense is a sector. There are 11 of them now because real estate's been added last year. I own every sector, and I never let any one sector be more than 20% of the portfolio. You can do this with ETFs if you want. It's not hard to do. You don't want to pick stocks yourself. There's lots of ETFs for every sector. That's fine. But the point is, if you remember the tech bubble, people let technology and internet become 90% of their portfolio in the late 90s, and when it blew up, they got killed. Last year, one of the worst sectors was energy. This year, one of the best sectors is energy. Things change, and you want exposure to all of those sectors, part of diversification. Number three, this is my mother's rule. Everything I own pays interest or it pays a dividend. I view my portfolio like a chicken on a spit dripping cash. If I'm investing, I got to get cash. I got to get paid to wait. That's what I live off. And I have to have that cash because I have a very expensive wife. She knows how to spend it. Number four, I own minimum 35% of fixed income. Those are bonds or real estate that's income producing. Right now I'm at 50%. I like the stability of fixed income. It doesn't go down as much when markets correct because people covet the cash that it generates, but it doesn't generally give you as great a return as the market does, but it provides stability. Right now, my bond portfolio is only making about 2.6%, but it's very short duration, 36 months, and I certainly made more than that in the market last year, but it does provide stability. As you age, and I say 40 is where this starts, you have to start being concerned about preservation above performance. I don't own any hot stocks. I don't care because I really am worried about preservation. My strategies are boring. I don't need to win every day. I just need to keep the cash. I don't need more. I need to keep what I've got. So for me, preservation is more important than performance. So I'm not chasing performance anymore. I have a very conservative portfolio. And this is something I've learned, again, the hard way. In life, poo-poo happens. You don't know when or why, it just happens. Catastrophic illness in the family, an accident, somebody in the family goes bankrupt, or is in dire need of some help. You need to have some liquidity. I keep 10% cash. Now, you make about 1.5% in the money market these days. It's practically nothing. It doesn't even beat inflation. But it's cash, and it's liquid, and it's there when you need it. And as you age, sometimes you're going to find you're going to need it. Another issue is, what do you do with your kids? You know, this is a big issue for many of you in this room. And when I had my big liquidity event in the late 90s, the nine of us that started a learning company sold it to Mattel for $4.2 billion. And we were one of those guys in a garage basement, and it was a very lucky outcome for us. We had nothing, and we had to do with something with what we got. And I set up a generational skipping trust. And here's how it works. It takes care of extended family members and some charities, in the case of the family members, from birth to last day of college. And then they get nothing. And when I set it up, I went home that day, and my kids were 4 and 6, and I told them, listen, Daddy's done something great for you. I put a trust together. It's going to take care of your education. And they just looked at me and went back to watching cartoons. Years later, my son, when he was in grade 10, and he was really doing poorly, I mean, terrible marks, was not focusing, he said, Dad, can you walk me through that trust deal again? I said, yeah, Trevor, it's great. It's going to take care of you right to the last day of high school, because it doesn't look like you're going to college. So you don't have to worry about that. And after that, nothing. He said, what do you mean nothing? I said, nothing. The dead bird under the nest doesn't learn how to fly. And he said, that sucks. I said, well, maybe you could take a little focus here and use this free money that's providing for you and figure out how to get into a college somewhere and get a job. And I don't know if it was that night that motivated him, but today he's in third year electrical engineering, and I'm pretty sure he's gonna get a job. But it motivated him, and I think that really the dead bird thing is a real issue, because if a child feels entitled or feels that they don't have to work because they don't need to, that's a waste of a life. People have to find a purpose. And it should be that they make it on their own. And you should not be responsible for your children after they leave. I don't know, it sounds cruel and it's tough, but if you don't force them out of the nest, they're never going to fly. That's my philosophy, and that's the way it works. Now, I started my presentation talking about the pursuit of entrepreneurship and saying that it wasn't for greed of money, and it isn't. The pursuit of entrepreneurship and the tremendous sacrifice in early years that it forces you to do provide for freedom later in life. And the definition of freedom is to allow you to do whatever you wish when you want to do it. I retired for 3 years and bored the living hell out of me. And I went back to work, and I've enjoyed myself ever since doing the things I want. One of the things that I can afford to do is say to my family, look, I'm going to be gone all week, flying all over the place. But this weekend, choose a city anywhere on earth, and I'll bring everybody there. Girlfriends, boyfriends, friends, I don't care. Let's get together. This weekend, for example, it's going to be South Beach in Miami. The week after that, it's going to be Geneva. Because my dad, who is 87, is of sound-minded body, but is not getting on a plane. So we want to go see him as much as we can. And I'll often say to anybody who wants to come, look, I'm going to go see George. I'm going to fly on a Friday all the way to Geneva. I'm coming back Sunday morning. I know that sounds crazy, but it's actually the definition of freedom. I can afford to do it. And often my son, aforementioned, Trevor in third year electrical, is the most adventurous and says, yeah, yeah, I'll come. And recently, we're getting on a plane, and he said to me the first time, Dad, why is it every time we get on this plane, I have to take a left and go sit in the back in 69D, and you take a right and go sit in the front in a giant chair with a big screen, and they roll a roast beef by on a trolley. And I'm in the back in the dark. I said, Trevor, you don't have any money. Anyways, thank you very much, guys. I really enjoyed myself.
Great.
All right, guys. We're going to give the guitar away. We got the last guitar to give away. How good was that? Did you feel like you got some good nuggets?